remember here in Pacific time, I was also, you know, making dinner while listening to the debates. One of the things that really struck me were the exchanges between Tulsi Gabbard and I think both Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg. And I thought that it was remarkable how much airtime they create for her by ginning up these attacks. And it's an interesting strategy. I think it obviously didn't help Kamala Harris to get in a fight with Gabbard in a previous debate. And I'm expecting that Gabbard gets more of a bounce out of this than either of those two. And it's weird to see people kind of fighting, you know, on the undercard, right? You have three candidates who are pulling very high, and Buttigieg is pulling high in some polls, but kind of eating away at Biden's support if anyone else is. I don't know. I overall thought it was kind of a terrible debate.
The one thing that struck me that I wanted to say from the debates was to give a shout out to Bernie for sticking his neck out for Palestine. And I think, as usual, folks who really like Bernie probably thought that he did really well in the debates. And those who, you know, maybe don't like Bernie don't necessarily think he did bad, but are probably not going to emphasize his performance.
It seemed really oriented at like getting people to respond to Burns rather than talking about substantive issues.
There's these reports of the secret dinner that Zuckerberg apparently had with Donald and Melania Trump. And a bunch of really ridiculous questions immediately popped in my head, like, what did they eat? Was extremely unhealthy food forced onto Zuck? And did he lap it up eagerly in order to win favor with the administration?
I think it's interesting because Trump obviously is like a Twitter fanatic. Facebook is what he needs to win the election, right? And what Brad Parscale needs to win the election. So there's so much, you don't know who's currying favor with who at this point, with Facebook worried about the Justice Department and antitrust, and also keeping its ad revenue streams going. And then the Trump campaign worried that if Facebook changes the game, they might not have such a home field advantage on the platform in terms of catering to reactionaries and harvesting personal information from Americans that they then use for other methods of retargeting, like going through, you know, and telemarketing to folks or sending them letters, etc. I mean, we knew that with Peter Thiel on the board of Facebook that, you know, that we have significant anti-society, anti-free press interests in the company. But it's scary to see. I didn't know that Melania was there, but the Peter Thiel connection was concerning to me.
In other news, I guess Google has announced a policy of limiting political ads on its platform.
I'm already seeing, you know, there's backlash from both the left and the right. Google is saying that it's going to limit access based on political affiliation and not allow use of voter records. The interesting thing here is that if you're good at targeting, you can do political targeting no matter what. It's funny, I was listening to Matt Taibbi on Joe Rogan recently, and he was saying that, you know, what if these, Rogan was saying, what if these platforms just banned all ads, like the government just said, no ads on these social media platforms. You can have social media, but they can't be ad driven, because so many of the ills that we're talking about in the political world of manipulation, disinformation, clickbait, you know, it's like the fake news phenomenon is actually a clickbait phenomenon. People write insane stories that get a lot of attention, they go viral, and it's just so that they can harvest ad money when people go to their websites. In this case, with this new targeting limitations by Google, myself, I'm like, I could still target those ads because I know, for example, what liberal people and conservative people like in terms of websites and affinities. And this is a little bit of like, when I've used Facebook targeting, I usually use their native targeting, not things like a custom voter list, because Facebook is best at reaching people who are active on their platform. They're not best at reaching specific individuals. On the Democratic side, we're usually trying to reach specific individuals with field efforts, phone calls, door knocking, you know, volunteer-led efforts, or paid canvassing efforts. So it'll be interesting to see how people react to this Google news. I have been consistently saying that what we need is democratic and open regulation of these social media companies, these advertising companies, really, in Google's case. They're not even doing social media anymore, because that targeting is still available. You can still target someone who likes CNN versus someone who likes MSNBC versus someone who likes Fox News, even if you're not targeting them by their voter affiliation. There's a need for really wide-scale reform, but it is interesting to see people kind of freaking out. I think apparently Brad Parscale, actually, I'm just going to check and see. My understanding is he lashed out on Twitter, and see what he says is, political elites and big tech want to rig elections. Dim primary in 2020 included. They're targeting Trump because he's the big dog, but they're also after Dems like Sanders and Warren. They won't stop until they control all digital political speech. And like, I don't know who he's talking about with political elites. I mean, he is the campaign manager for the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. It's funny to, and I think my understanding is he like bought a Ferrari with all the cash he made from Trump 2016.
In terms of like reaching non-voters though, that sort of sweeping Facebook ad demographic kind of scope is better, right? Because there's probably a shit ton of people who don't vote who are on Facebook.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is, it's probably a good segue into talking about some of the work that my firm was doing in Virginia in this 2019 election cycle with the House of Delegates and the General Assembly races there. We ended up working with a group called Vote Absentee Virginia to advertise to young people, to asking them to request absentee ballots. And one of the things, we did Facebook advertising, we did Google search advertising as well in one district. One of the things that I see every time I use search advertising in an election is that in the few days before a general election or a primary, you know, any kind of where you have an election day, not a concentrated mail ballot effort, people are searching for things like, where do I vote? How do I vote? Where's my polling place? A lot of, you know, campaigns would wish they were saying, search for such and such for Virginia House of Delegates, but that's not what they do. They're looking for very, very basic information. And that tells me that there are just a lot of folks who are interested in voting, would like to vote, but it's not their top priority, right? It's something they're trying to squeeze in as part of their day. And this is why I recently watched the new Robert Greenwald film, Suppressed. And you can find that movie online for free and watch it. It's a short documentary about voter suppression in Georgia. And voter suppression is very simple when you create the environment where it takes all day to vote, where you have to stand in line for an indeterminate amount of time when you're already like taking a break from work or from, you have your kids in childcare. And in Georgia, they're doing that by like limiting the number of voting machines that are available. In like, say, in a wealthy white district, you might have no lines at all, plenty of voting machines. And then in an area where it's predominantly African-American voters, people are in line for hours. So a lot of the challenges we face are, they're not about micro-targeting. I'm all about getting more Americans to vote. We have something like 100 million eligible Americans who could vote and didn't vote in the 2016 presidential elections. It's just an obscene number of available voters. So there's two things you do. Is one is making appeals on issues that matter to people enough to get them out to vote. Two, it's making it easy enough to vote that people are not denied that franchise. And I think I read an article a couple of years ago that really, I think, reflected, and I've written about it on one of my blogs. It basically said that a decade of micro-targeting has shrunk the Democratic Party. The problem is when you only go after, like, the voters you know are in the tank for you, and you only go after the people who vote frequently, and then you kind of downgrade, you know, anyone who, say, votes only once or twice in, say, the last four elections, instead of giving more opportunity for people to vote, instead of enlarging your electorate, it's kind of diminishing returns. It's like you're just hounding. And people experience this, right? If you're a frequent voter and you haven't voted by like noon on election day, like you're getting calls, you're getting texts, you're getting emails, you know, it's like they're after you. You got to get out there.
Right, right.
But
and
if you're
just one of and just by way of background with these Virginia elections, this was a really successful election for the left and for the Democratic Party, and you had state representatives or delegates keeping their positions, more seats getting won, shifting to a Democratic majority in Virginia, and both center left and further left candidates won in these elections. And so I think that when you're talking about this general approach of helping fight voter suppression, getting non-voters to vote, and bringing people out instead of micro-targeting, it sounds like that had to have been part of the strategy at work in Virginia, precisely because of the wide range of candidates that won, which is necessary, I think, if you're going to shift a state majority.
Yes, and there were many things going on in Virginia, and the one, you know, that I can talk about with authority is the part that I worked on, which was awareness, activation, and persuasion, advertising primarily on Facebook in the weeks preceding the election. I think there was an incredible amount of organizing work that had gone on for a long time. 2017 was a good year for Democrats in Virginia, but 2019 was even better, you know, now controlling the governor and both houses of the legislature. And so I was active either with candidates or with GOTV efforts in 21 different districts. And one of the things, one of my clients, my firm is Action Sprout, which is a software platform that really, it does a lot of different things, but the two things it does that are most helpful is it gives story suggestions, both curated and algorithmic, that candidates and organizations can share on Facebook. One of the things you see when you look at Facebook performance, pages are where you advertise. You know, you can definitely use groups for organizing, but pages are for advertising, and they also give you a lot of statistics around who's visiting, the demographics of who's visiting. And we see over and over and over that organizations that simply increase the number of posts per day increase their results dramatically in terms of how many people they're reaching. I did some experiments using Action Sprout suggested posts with some political pages that were not candidate pages earlier this year. And what I found was with just a week of increasing the post volume and, you know, some curation to make sure that they're posts that are going to pop, but we were able to double the reach number of people that were seeing content from these pages in just a week with no advertising money, simply by posting more. The second thing that Action Sprout does is it makes it easy to do multivariate ad testing. So a lot of firms that do advertising, they really focus on the ads themselves. And I actually think that the ads are like the least important thing, and that the most important thing is audience and frequency. And so if you're scrolling your Facebook feed and you see something that looks like an ad, unless you already like the advertiser, my guess is that most people scroll right through. They might hit that 3-second video metric that Facebook uses, but they're not really engaging deeply with ad content. The other thing is Facebook won't let you advertise text-heavy images, and a lot of groups will
Sometimes pisses me off so much, by the way.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Facebook is a dictatorship, so we kind of have to do what it says. And yet a lot of people do not. They'll create these really text-heavy, graphic-heavy, like endorsement cards, for example, when they get an endorsement, and they'll post that. And then you can't advertise it because it's got too much text, or the reach of it will be limited by Facebook. So I have worked with Action Sprout on refining a strategy, and we're continuing to refine it. I think that online advertising for politics is constantly evolving, which is why I'm never shocked by the decisions by these platforms, such as, you know, Google limiting political targeting, right? For example, I created an audience. I knew that from polling data, so I had a really nice research memo from a polling firm in one of my races, and it's because I think that particular district had a few different candidates who overlapped in the district, it's like, you know, it's like a Senate and a delegate, couple of delegate campaigns. So they did this good research memo, and it said we need to reach like blue collar women, and I could find targeting in Facebook to advertise to rich women. Like, you literally could advertise in the district to women making over $250,000 a year, but it would not let you do the reverse, advertise to poor people.
Basically. Shocking.
Right. But not surprising if you consider that Facebook is
I'm sorry, we live in a garbage can in so many ways. We live in a fucking garbage can, but yeah, continue. Sorry.
Well, because you the platform is designed to make money. So they want you to advertise Lexuses, but not, you know, find the market for your used car, right? It's pretty crazy stuff, because I just went online and did some research and found a study that was published earlier this year, a very reputable study done in Europe with permission from the people in the study, which is different than Facebook's way of doing business. And it was a study that showed that they could determine someone's economic status through the language they used in their social media posts and through their likes of different pages. And we could go into that for like a whole show, but I was then able to create an audience of economically disadvantaged women by excluding terms like Las Vegas, Hawaii, vacations, going to the beach, and so on, which shows you how granular and also really invasive these social media targeting or ad targeting tools are, both from Google and Facebook and from many, many other companies, where we know from scientific studies that people who, for example, mention those words tend to be wealthy, right? How do you win elections or have real influence with advertisements? When I say that Action Sprout helps you create multivariate advertising programs, what it does is in Facebook, you create audiences. Also in Action Sprout now, there are suggested audiences for campaigns. And what I do is I match a lot of content to several different audiences. So say I have 7 audiences, but I'll run 10 pieces of content in a week, and that's going to be 70 different ads. And then what I'm looking for is, out of those 10 pieces of content, which one performs best for each of these audience groups. And so you might end up with a video about the candidate talking about education performing best with parents or with older Democrats. And then you might find that it's a picture of the candidate canvassing at the local campus that performs best with college graduates under 40. And the amazing thing is the performance difference between audiences and content can be as dramatic as 10 to 1. So I have examples from Virginia where an ad to get a click on it would cost 25 cents for one group and $2.50 for another. And so as a advertising consultant, what I'm doing is I'm fielding all of these ads and then I'm tuning all of it so that the budget is spent effectively to reach as many potential voters as possible with at the lowest cost. So literally the difference between the audience and the content can be a 10x differentiator.
So you have literally used ad term hacks and other hacks to help left candidates reach working class voters through this corporate social media.
Right. And yeah, because their tools are made to reach people who are going to make big purchases. We're trying to reach people who are going to help us, you know, have a society. I'm also running a private community for progressive candidates and campaigners who want to learn more about how to use. It's sponsored by Action Sprout, so it's got a lot of Action Sprout stuff. It also has a lot of stuff about just how to set up Facebook. It's also a place where people can ask questions of other practitioners, other candidates, and me and other folks from my team and from Action Sprout. And if anyone listening wants to join that, just reach out to me. You know, I'm very easy to find on Twitter and Facebook or by email. And I'm happy to get you in there. We do plan to expand that to include things like email fundraising, like Google search strategy, maybe more strategy around video. But Action Sprout is very focused on Facebook. A lot of my expertise is in Facebook. One of the really interesting things that we learned in Virginia also, there's basically three kinds of content we were using. We're using like what I call owned content, and this would be things that are created by the candidates or campaigns. That could be video. If, for example, one candidate who was an incumbent who the Republicans targeted and really went after, and they spent a lot of money attacking him, he had these direct-to-camera videos. Like in one, he was talking about choice. Another, he was talking about education. Another, he was talking about healthcare. And they were short videos. So I helped just make sure that those were captioned because a lot of people don't watch videos with sound on Facebook. So you really want to make sure that anything you're going to advertise is captioned. One tip as well is that you can't edit a post after it's been advertised. So you want to make sure that it's optimal before you begin to advertise, or else you have to, you know, create a new post. So that owned content was important. And then there was what I'll call organic content, which was, I always tell my clients, keep posting. Don't worry about what I'm doing. Like, keep doing what you want to do. If there's an endorsement you want to talk about it. Like, I'm usually not there. I'm usually not even in the same state. So I want them kind of updating as they go. And one of the pieces of content that we found performs better than anything with advertising is simply photo sets. So if a candidate is canvassing at a campus and they're shaking hands with students and having great conversations, posting a series of photos from that event, not only do people click on the photos to enlarge them, but if you have more than, I think it's 4 or 5 photos, Facebook then says, like, they put a plus button so you can see the rest of the photos, and people click on that as well. So the best performing content is a large group of photos, not 20 or 30, but like, you know, 8 photos, right? And Facebook, it's algorithmic. Like, you don't communicate with them. They're not making decisions about how to help your ads do well. What they're looking at is an automated system is looking at whether people are clicking on it. And because people click on that photo, it gets pushed out further. Your ad cost goes down. And this is what we saw in the 2016 election, where there were a lot of reports that Donald Trump, and some of this is, you know, it's not public information. It was coming from the campaigns, but that Donald Trump's campaign was spending much less than Hillary Clinton to reach large numbers of people. And this is because the virality really caters towards these reactive behaviors that I think skew skew Republican. The final piece of content we're using is the suggested stories from ActionSprout. And when you think about Facebook advertising, instead of thinking about creating slick ads, you have to think about how people use Facebook. And so with ActionSprout, we put out a lot of just trusted news headlines, and then the candidate can add their own commentary. And I always think about that, at least the way I use Facebook, what you see first is usually the headline or maybe the photo that's with a story. Then you see who posted it, and then you read the commentary, the post itself. And so what you're doing is you're using like a trusted story as the vehicle for getting the candidate's name and hopefully the commentary about the topic. That could be, you know, it could be your comment about what you thought about Bernie talking about Palestine at the debate. And, you know, that's a topic that's kind of eye-catching, it's grabbing, it's got Bernie's name in it, it's got, you know, controversial issue. And then you're going to say, oh, you know, what's my local candidate saying? Or, oh, I've never heard of this candidate, I'm going to check them out. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, make a mental note that, that I liked what they had to say. And I ran, I think, thousands of ad variants in Virginia in just a matter of weeks. And we know that the Trump campaign uses millions of ad variants, you know, over the course of a year or two. And so this stuff is, I want the left to use Facebook effectively because it's incredibly influential in our elections right now. It was great to see and great to be a part of. We did have some, did some analysis that indicated we had a 3% lift in the districts where we worked. Now, you know, as I said, there's a shared many, many, victory. What is it? Victory has many fathers. Is that how you say it?
And mothers, I suppose.
And mothers. Yeah. Many parents. This 3% lift was nice to see. I really believe that it's organizing and media, and then also a good candidate, you know, for the district that, that make an election. I think it's less about the skill of your micro-targeting or how incredible your ads were. I know that, that's what political consultants like get the big bucks for and get the awards for. But at the end of the day, you know, like I worked on a race in 2018 where we raised $200,000 and were outspent 100-1. And it's like, yeah, it's the money, stupid. You know, like if someone has $20 million to spend on advertising, they're going to win the race if the other side doesn't have millions of dollars to spend on advertising. And organizing is amazing, but even at that scale, like to match $20 million in advertising, you still need millions of dollars to pay enough people to knock on enough doors and make enough phone calls to have to match the impact of someone's ads being on every single television everywhere you go. I mean, literally, I was like walking into like a bar, you know, and I'd see, or a restaurant or a hotel, and I'd see the ads. You know, it was, I know that Democrats like to think that even when I worked at Nation Builder, the founder of Nation Builder was very anti-advertising. It's all about organizing. But in today's environment, it's very much about both. And I think that Democrats, an incredible amount of advantage in that their organizing game is strong and they know how to do canvases and door to door. Republicans, I think, rely more on communities like maybe churches, but outside of that, it's heavily advertising driven. And if Democrats could just get it right, do the both, the media coverage, the advertising coverage, and the organizing, I think that that Democrats and progressives really could be the dominant force in American politics.
And my name is Matt Stannard, and I've been talking to Adriel Hampton, as we do every week, and talking about all of the different ways to fight the oligarchy.
Adriel versus the oligarchs.